Perhaps you'd like to sit down. Not you, handicapped girl. Good morning. My name is Clancy Immersland, and I'm an alcoholic. Would you all join me in the serenity prayer? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. We are going to this morning, our topic this morning that has been given to us is this to the end that our great blessings may never spoil us. So ever since Friday morning at the marathons, we've been talking about living, using AA in life, practicing these principles in our personnel and all our affairs, of working with the steps. And this is the first and obviously the last topic that deals with our traditions. The phrase, this to the end of our great blessings may never spoil us, as I'm sure most of you recognize, is from the 12th tradition in the long form. And so this morning, since we've had a great many discussions on the steps and on life, we're going to, for a few moments, talk about the traditions. We'll try not to make it dull. It'll be interesting, I hope. But it's something that we want to take with us because our life depends on it. And I've asked Marilyn to read us the long form of the 12 traditions.
Hi, I'm Marilyn Slater, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Marilyn.
The 12 traditions, the long form. One, each member of Alcoholics Anonymous is but a small part of a great whole. AA must continue to live, or most of us will surely die. Hence, our common welfare comes first, but individual welfare follows close afterward. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Three, our membership ought to include all who suffer from alcoholism. Hence, we may refuse none who wish to recover. Nor ought AA membership ever depend upon money or conformity. Any two or three alcoholics gathered together for sobriety may call themselves an AA group, provided that, as a group, they have no other affiliation. Four, with respect to its own affairs, each AA group should be responsible to no other authority than its own conscience. But when its plans concern the welfare of neighboring groups also, those groups ought to be consulted, and no group, regional committee, or individual should ever take any action that might greatly affect AA as a whole without conferring with the trustees of the General Service Board. On such issues, our common welfare is paramount. Five, each Alcoholics Anonymous group ought to be a spiritual entity having but one primary purpose, that of carrying its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Six, problems of money, property, and authority may easily divert us from our primary spiritual aim. We think, therefore, that any considerable property of genuine use to AA should be separately incorporated and managed, thus dividing the material from the spiritual. An AA group, as such, should never go into business. Secondary aids to AA, such as clubs or hospitals, which require much property or administration, ought to be incorporated and to be set apart that, if necessary, they can be freely discarded by the groups. Hence, such facilities ought not to use the AA name. Their management should be the sole responsibility of those people who financially support them. For clubs, AA managers are usually preferred, but hospitals, as well as other places of recuperation, ought to be well outside AA and medically supervised. While an AA group may cooperate with anyone, such cooperation ought never go so far as affiliation or endorsement, actual or implied. An AA group can bind itself to no one. Seven, the AA groups themselves ought to be fully supported by the voluntary contributions of their own members. We think that each group should soon achieve this ideal, that any public solicitation of funds using the name of Alcoholics Anonymous is highly dangerous, whether by groups, clubs, hospitals, or other outside agencies, that acceptance of large gifts from any source or of contributions carrying any obligation, whatever, is unwise. Then, too, We view with much concern those AA treasuries which continue beyond prudent reserves to accumulate funds for no stated AA purpose. Experience has often warned us that nothing can so surely destroy our spiritual heritage as futile disputes over property, money, and authority. 8. Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional. We define professionalism as the occupation of counseling alcoholics for fees or hire. But we may employ alcoholics where they are going to perform those services for which we might otherwise have to engage non-alcoholics. Such special services may be well recompensed, but our usual AA 12-step work is never to be paid for. 9. Each AA group needs the least possible organization. Rotating leadership is the best. The small group may elect its secretary, the large group its rotating committee, and the groups of a large metropolitan area their central or intergroup committee, which often employs a full-time secretary. The trustees of the General Service Board are, in effect, our AA General Service Committee. They are custodians of our AA tradition and the receivers of voluntary AA contributions by which we maintain our AA General Service Office at New York. They are authorized by the groups to handle our overall public relations, and they guarantee the integrity of our principal newspaper, the AA Grapevine. All such representatives are to be guided in the spirit of service, for true leaders in AA are but trusted and experienced servants of the whole. They derive no real authority from their titles. They do not govern. Universal respect is the key to their usefulness. 10. No AA group or member should ever, in such a way as to implicate AA, express any opinion on outside controversial issues, particularly those of politics, alcohol reform, or sectarian religion. The Alcoholics Anonymous groups oppose no one. Concerning such matters, they can express no views whatever. 11. Our relations with the general public should be characterized by personal anonymity. We think AA ought to avoid sensational advertising. Our names and pictures as AA members ought not be broadcast, filmed, or publicly printed. Our public relations should be guided by the principle of attraction rather than promotion. There is never need to praise ourselves. We feel it better to let our friends recommend us. 12. And finally, we of Alcoholics Anonymous believe that the principle of anonymity has an immense spiritual significance. It reminds us that we are to place principles before personalities, that we are actually to practice a genuine humility. This to the end, that our great blessings may never spoil us, that we shall forever live in thankful contemplation of Him who presides over us all.
Thank you, Marilyn. In the early 1940s, Alcoholics Anonymous was pulling itself apart. There was tremendous discord going on in AA. There were all sorts of bad things happening. Not only were there people pulling in different directions, but Bill Wilson's right-hand man, his favorite all-time man, a man named Hank P., had gotten into beef with him and got drunk and was traveling around to all the groups telling the people to stay away from Bill Wilson because he was a bad man and a cheater and a liar and a thief. AA was pulling apart. There were people, all sorts of, some of the things they were doing was kind of funny. The one amuses me. There's a reason for it, but it amuses me. A guy in Florida was selling memberships in AA, in his group. And they wrote him a letter to the World Service Office, the little office they had, and said, you mustn't sell memberships. And he said, why not? He said, the reason I do it, not for the money. He said, but down here, people who get things for nothing don't appreciate it. If they pay for it, they listen. And I don't keep the money, I send it into New York. And he said, well, that sounds pretty good to us, you know. All sorts of funny things and weird things, but it was coming apart. Hatred, people getting drunk, people fighting, people. And a guy in North Carolina wrote a letter to Bill Wilson and said, you know, Bill, this is getting to be like the Washingtonians. And Bill Wilson had never heard of the Washingtonians. So he looked it up. He didn't know anybody that had found about it, so he looked it up. And much to his surprise, he found there had been an organization in many ways like Alcoholics Anonymous just exactly 100 years before, and had done much better than AA did, and had become extinct, and not only extinct, but no one had ever knew they ever existed. And he looked into it, and he found out this, most of you know a little bit about the Washingtonians. Six guys got together in a bar in Baltimore. There's a lot of drinking in the first half of the 19th century, the most prolific period of drinking in American history for some reason. But they got together and said, boy, we're drinking so bad, can we do something? And they, over a period of time, they formed a little organization where they decided to help each other not drink. And they got some other little guys involved, and nobody had heard of anything like this before. And so it really took off. Pretty soon they had a little group in Philadelphia, that little group in Washington, that little group here and there. And it really grew by leaps and bounds. And over a period of time, they just were phenomenal. And it all boiled down to people who used to drink trying to help people who were stopping drinking. By 1842, they were all over many places. This was 2 years later. In fact, if you ever look in a book of Lincoln's speeches, you'll find a speech he gave to the Washingtonian movement in 1842, celebrating their second anniversary. And it's quite interesting because it's a short speech, but he somehow knew something that we wouldn't think he'd know. He says, as far as I can tell, you people get a different reaction from alcohol than I do. I don't understand it, but if you didn't, you wouldn't drink like this. And no one had that concept at all. But anyway, it was all over and it grew, and it was estimated by 1845, the top estimate was that there were 500,000 sober alcoholics. The bottom estimate, if you really take the rock bottom estimate, there was 100,000 sober alcoholics. Now, you stop and think, at the end of 5 years, Alcoholics Anonymous had 2,000 and thought they were doing remarkably well. And here's a group that had 100,000, maybe 500,000 sober alcoholics. And they did something that then, based on their success, that you hear people talking about in AA today, because it's intellectually correct. They said, our fellowship is so successful in helping others that we really should not just confine it to people like us. We should help other people with problems too. We should help people who have different kinds of problems. We should embrace all who need help. And so they threw open their doors to people. They wound up with different kinds of people. They wound up with a number of narcotics addicts, not the narcotics that we know today of heroin and cocaine, but in those days laudanum and opium, which were severe problems. They had a lot of people come in who were dissatisfied with slavery and wanted to start an anti-slavery movement. They were involved with people who wanted to stamp out the sale of alcohol. They had all kinds of people who wanted to improve the social fabric. And they embraced them all, and the alcoholics, and the anti-slavers, and the narcotics addicts, and they just, to change the world. And by 1848, the Washingtonian movement was extinct. And to all intents and purposes, there's a few people left. I have a book home written in 1862 by a guy who had been a member of the Washingtonians who couldn't understand what happened. He said, we were doing so well. He gave a list of the places he had traveled by ox cart and train to talk. Because it evolved something much like AA. People from this town would go and talk in that town, and people from that town would go and talk in this town, and on, as always, things like this. And they became extinct. So extinct that 100 years later, the most successful treatment of alcoholism ever had never heard that they ever existed. And Bill Wilson studied their history with mounting apprehension and intrigue, because he saw much of what he was facing in his own situation. And in the next couple years, and talking to people and listening to people, he sat down and realized something had to be done or AA would surely die. So he created what Marilyn just read, the long form of the 12 traditions. And he introduced them one by one over a period of time in the grapevine. Now, Alcoholics Anonymous has made the great mistake that every spiritually oriented group mates. And the group is always, the thing is always the same. Our goals are so spiritual and wonderful, there's no need to have rules, because our love of God and what we're trying to do will help us. And they forget that all this is meaningless because the organization must be made up of human beings. And human beings are fallible, and they're selfish, and they're nasty sometimes, and they're petty. And we have high ideals, as the book, in our book it says that we must keep our head in the stars and our feet on the ground, but for most of us our feet many times are stuck firmly in the mud or in the cow dung somewhere. Just human beings are not quite as we'd like to have. And in addition to that, Alcoholics Anonymous has one other terrible fault that cannot be corrected. It is full of alcoholics. And such a nastier crew, you'll never know, I'll tell you. If you don't believe that, look within yourself tonight. And here's the funny thing, not full of alcoholics. AA, much of AA rebelled strongly against the 12 traditions. There were all kinds of outcries, movements, letters flooded the World Service Office, where the little officer was. We don't need these stinking rules! We're here for love! And if you don't think so, we'll kill you! Terrible things. And there was a terrible schism there. And there were people, some of the meetings, who would stop writing to New York because they'd run to hear about those damn traditions. And people were dying on all sides. Alcoholics Anonymous, like America, was the tree of sobriety is like the tree of liberty. It was watered by the blood of its martyrs, I'll tell you. And finally, in 1950, at the first international convention, after much travail, they got these two organizations, the Akron Group and the New York Group, to have a convention. And they introduced these traditions one by one. 12 guys got up. I have a tape of this meeting. It really is fascinating. 12 guys got up, and each took a tradition and tried to explain to the people, this is not threatening. We're not against you. There's a reason for it. It's based on it. And little by little, they listened, and little by little, they accepted and finally voted in the 12 traditions. So Alcoholics Anonymous was in business 15 years, and thousands of people died as a result of the lack of the traditions. The next time you think the 12 traditions are just something we read in the groups to see if newcomers can pronounce autonomous, that's why I think the long form of the traditions are very good, because that's the way they were written. The short form is what was made as a kind of abbreviation so people would make it more comfortable. But in our home group, the Pacific group, some of you have been there, we read the long form of the traditions once a month. And even there, where we know it's going to happen, there are still people who are stupid enough to groan when they say, tonight we'll read the long form of the traditions. See, I think it's kind of cute to groan at that. But I'll tell you, all of the steps and all of the actions and all of the principles mean nothing, because there have been all sorts of people who have had these, unless we have some boundaries to keep them in. Because left for our own devices, obsessions become normal. Seems to me that's the way it is. People, we have to have something that unifies us, at least so we're marching, if not to the same drummer, at least in the same general direction. The old joke about Alcoholics Anonymous is a protest movement. I remember the 1960s. Everybody was protesting, right? Everybody's having a march on Washington. Everybody. And in our group, we were talking, I was talking to some guy one night, I said, we'd have a terrible time being in AA. We'd have a protest march on Washington demanding our rights. And we'd get there and the guy would say, okay, here we are in Seattle. Who do we talk to? And in the traditions, the only thing that's been changed since they were first printed in the Grapevine of 1951, or printed in the first edition of that edition of the book, is that there was one change. The people who wrote the traditions had been sober a while. So they said, the only requirement for membership is an honest desire to stop drinking. And after that came out, they realized Hardly any newcomers have an honest desire to stop drinking. That's what you get after you're here a while. So they change it to desire to stop drinking in the next edition. And so it stands today. And the, I don't want to talk too long. I want to leave 2 minutes for each of my participants. Which will be a minute and a half more than they need. Laugh if you want to, but I heard them. But anyway, so now we have the traditions, and people come to AA, and they're just something they read at the meetings, and they're just a pamphlet, it's just dull boredom, and you hardly ever stop and realize how important they are. And as a rule, the traditions are all rather self-explanatory, but there's a truism that really is true, and that is this. No force outside of AA will ever destroy us. The more attacks we get, the more we band together. We get like Christians in the catacombs. We just defy. You know, these organizations are all, this year there's been two big organizations who want to form their own group. Like, what's the one called? Rational Recovery, and somebody else called Atheists and Alcoholism or something. What do you want that God crap? And they get big articles in the paper, and AA refuses to answer. They call it the World Serves Us. What do you think about this? They say you're full of crap. What do you say? We have no opinion. It makes them crazy. It just... Person, did you cut off your funding? We don't take any funding. It's just Alcoholics Anonymous makes people crazy. That aren't it. And the people who set up these organizations are usually people who, you've all heard of Synanon? Synanon was formed by an AA member who didn't like the God concept. So he started his own AA group in Venice, called it the Tender Loving Care Club, of which I was briefly a member as a rebel. And I wasn't even an alcoholic at that time, just misunderstood. And he was 2 years sober in the World Service, the central office said, well, listen, you can't call yourself AA because the whole world does not accept you as a higher power. So he threw all the alcoholics out, took in narcotics addicts. He never took a narcotic in his life. But he said, at least he won't get any letters. They got no office. And he had a run for 20 years. But you remember, when it all went down the toilet, they found him sitting at a table in Tucson, Arizona, pouring a drink of whiskey because that's what he turned to in moments of travail. They all go down the toilet sooner or later. We don't have to be concerned. What we have to be concerned about is rending ourselves apart from within. And that's why it's necessary sometimes, just for a few minutes, this convention, maybe this hour, to talk a little bit about the traditions, why they're important. Most of them are self-explanatory. The one on unity certainly is, and we all know why Bill wrote it. It's because AA was coming apart. His best friend was ripping into him and telling people he was a thief and a cheat, and there were many people in, like, Chicago would not correspond with New York. They'd correspond with Akron. All things like this. So the unity we had to pull together eventually, because the resentment of hatred really gets to be old stuff, I'll tell you. And the groups are autonomous, and we are self-supporting our own contributions, which is a great thing. There are just a couple steps that we today, that are under some kind, a couple of traditions that are under a little attack from within. One, of course, is, what do you have to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous? Why can't a narcotic addict be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous? Why can't an Al-Anon be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous? We're all working the same steps. Why do people complain about Al-Anon speaking at AA meetings? We're all members of the same organization. And we have to get down to the basic concept of what makes Alcoholics Anonymous and the Washingtonians different than all other groups in history. You got to remember, there's been 4,000 years of people trying to help alcoholics, and the information we have in these 12 steps and all of our literature, none of it is new. I can find that in previous books. If you do any study, you can find it easily. The thing that makes it different is this. It turns out that probably the greatest obstacle you and I will ever have to comfort is that feeling of self that manifests itself as, but my case truly is different. It is not quite like yours. I have these deep emotions that you don't understand, and so on. Drinking is not really my number one problem, so all these other things. And so, the thing that has made AA so significant, starting with when Bill talked to Dr. Bob in 1935, Dr. Bob said, he was a member of the Oxford group already. He'd been a spiritual leader. Bill had enough to tell him. He said, but he was the first man that ever seemed to understand how I felt. One alcoholic talking to another alcoholic. At AA number 3, I heard him talk years ago, a guy named Bill D. He says, I was laying that bed in Akron, and them two fellas came to talk to me about my drinking, and I didn't even want to hear it. He said, but they never talked to me about my drinking once. They talked to me about their drinking and how they felt. And I never heard anybody describe me quite that well, and I couldn't believe it. And I stuck with them fellas. I've been with them ever since. And to this very day, the thing that sets AA apart is one alcoholic talking to another alcoholic. I can empathize with how an overeater must feel, but I can't understand. I've used this example many times. I talked at one of the first OA meetings because they didn't have any OAs that came to the AA club and got AA members. And I gave a talk at Obsessions, which I'm an authority on. Not the recovery from obsessions, just the obsession. I'm an authority. And then hearing these women talk about how they ate, you know, I understood it intellectually, but I was repelled. I thought, these pigs, no wonder they're, you know. I don't want to shake hands with them. And to this day, I understand. I've been working with narcotics addicts and helping narcotics addicts for over a quarter of a century. But I do not understand what it feels like to get that hit from narcotics. I understand how an alcoholic feels. And they understand how I feel. And that's why we are here together. And that's why we have to, you know, you don't even have to debate it. At meetings, they want to debate it. There's specific literature that says it specifically. The reason it wasn't in the book is because it wasn't any question then. But there's a book called Problems of the Alcohol, a little white folder written by Bill Wilson. And it says specifically, there is no way we can make a non-alcoholic a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. They can come to the open meetings and listen, but they cannot become members. Not because we're against them, but because it is not one alcoholic talking to another alcoholic. That's why people complain about having non-alcoholics talk at AA meetings. If it's entertainment, let's get a show. But let's not get people up there who are talking, saying, you're wonderful. 30 years ago, there was a rush of getting your doctor to talk at AA meetings, your clergyman to come over and say, you people are so wonderful. And it made them all feel good, but had absolutely no therapeutic value whatsoever. And what you got to do in your group, you know, there's thousands and thousands of Southern California AAs who are not here at this convention because they're not that involved. You are involved. People like you and me must go to our groups, and we must help remind them, if they don't remember, that you must be an alcoholic to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. You cannot be in a closed meeting. A closed meeting means the closed meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. Not a closed meeting where everybody happens to come in and you bring your wife, let her talk too, or your husband. So, that is under some attack, but we're weathering it. Because the people who don't believe it eventually fall by the wayside sooner or later anyway. But we just don't want them to take newcomers with them. If you want to do it your way, if you want to do it opposed to the way, fine. But don't take new people with you. I have 3 daughters in AA. And I had breakfast with a couple of them, one of my daughters and 2 of my grandsons and my granddaughter this morning. And based on my evaluation of those grandchildren, they're all going to be alcoholics or worse. I mean, I love them, but they got bad blood. What can I tell you? Their mother's side is just... But I'll tell you this, if they do, I want them to be able to come to AA 20 years from now and find 12 steps and 12 traditions here. And it's our duty to do that. More important than anything else, you have no greater duty in your life than to make sure AA survives in its present form. I'll tell you. There's nothing you will ever have more important next to your own sobriety. The other traditions to get ourselves self-supporting, we all understand that one. We don't take from anybody. People, still organizations find that so staggering that AA is the only world that will not take money from outside. People are always leaving their house to AA, and we have to go to hire a lawyer and go to court to refuse the damn thing. But we want you to have it. We don't care. No. We're too mature for that. but gives us freedom. We don't, you know, it's a great freedom not to, when you haven't, that's why they changed the literature prices a couple of years ago, changed it, because they suddenly realized our greatest customer is Hazelden, who Hillary talked about at length last night. But our great biggest customer is Hazelden. It got to the point where our financial integrity depended upon Hazelden buying all that literature. Now, there's still nothing wrong, but if that day ever comes, the day can come when they might say, look, would you just change this one little part of your literature, because it conflicts with what we think. Well, we don't want to, but we need. So we change it so we don't have to depend on Hazelden. We don't depend on anybody now. We depend on ourselves, and we're working towards doing it much more successfully. I don't care how many times you clap, I'm not going to stop. And the last thing I want to still under some attack this morning in the world is anonymity. And that's what this particular phrase we're dealing with this morning deals with, anonymity. You know, anonymity first came about because people were afraid they'd find out they're an alcoholic, afraid they'd find out an AA. But over the years, it's become, you know, you're hardly an actor anymore if you haven't shown coming out of Betty Ford with your big book. Hi. I haven't got time to meetings, but I'll be making a new reservation at Betty Ford for next spring. I don't judge. I just support. But anonymity has become a spiritual thing over the years. Bill Wilson wrote about it at length, and many people have. It becomes the sacrifice step. This is the one thing we do here to offer up something of ourselves. Now, a lot of people wonder what anonymity means. Some people, you know, it makes me crazy when people call up and say, do you know my friend Al R? I don't know anybody named Al R. I don't want to know anybody named Al R, and don't ever call me again. Yeah. I don't actually say it, but I think about it. Anonymity is something to be done at the level of press, radio, and films. We do not use it for self-aggrandizement. We don't use it in AA meetings. Dr. Bob once upon a time said, it is as much a violation of our anonymity procedure to not use your last name inside of AA as it is to use it outside of AA. And I don't know why that, you know. You think about that. Give me a call sometime. I'm in the book. Fred J. Reminds me of AA members who have unlisted phone numbers. I think, God, they must be important. Bill Wilson didn't have an unlisted phone number at his home. Chuck Chamberlain had a listed phone number. Everybody I know that's ahead of me had unlisted phone numbers. But some little puke 2 years sober who's finally got a job has his phone number unlisted, so he won't be bothered. Bothered by whom, for Christ's sake? Nobody cares. Yeah. The only purpose of a phone is so people can call you. And they say, well, I give people my unlisted phone numbers. Oh, did you give that newcomer sitting in the back who identified with you last night, did you think to go back and give him your unlisted phone number? But I know it's just a matter of choice. Some people need unlisted phone numbers. I mean, I suppose police and lawyers sometimes and things like that, but the general run of people do not. But anonymity is a spiritual thing that where we use to not use what AA, use AA for our own purposes. But to get back, I'm not saying about what anonymity is. Now, because of the nature of my work, I'm in the papers and on television a lot. I'm always on, you know, I have a 6-page article in the Reader's Digest, and I've had a TV, two TV shows done and so on. And people always write, you've broken your anonymity. I've never broken my anonymity. And I have no patience with those that do. If you will, there's no anonymity to break to say that my name is Clancy Immersland and I'm a recovered alcoholic. That is not an anonymity break. That just describes my condition. Anonymity is when I say, I am a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, when I say that, if I say I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, I cannot use my name or my face. If you want to use my name, then I can't say I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. When you see TV programs, you see silhouettes. But if you see their face, they cannot be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. You cannot identify an individual as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous by name or face. That's what it's about. And any violation of that will not hurt Alcoholics Anonymous, but seems to hurt the individual that breaks their anonymity. Because that's the interesting part about it. Those are the people that get hurt. I have known no one who has publicly broken their anonymity who has not suffered from it. I remember years ago, this book written by Lillian Roth, she said, I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and she says, you shouldn't say it's a violence. I'm going to help AA. Let them know there's a big shot like me. And 2 years later, when she lay face down drunk on the streets of Palm Springs, choking on her own vomit, I'm sure that she didn't help AA much, but it didn't make any difference. AA flourished, and she didn't. Diana Barrymore, I remember her book years ago, Too Much Too Soon. She talked about how she went to AA now, and she said, well, I have a little wine with dinner, but I want to help AA as much as I can. When she died in convulsions, didn't hurt AA. And I guess the reason for that is this. If I say, look, I'm a member of AA, I put myself in a different situation. I am now helping AA. AA is no longer helping me. And it changes our entire relationship. What I must do, the whole basis of everything we do here is based upon me attempting to find some form of humility, and humility is a difficult thing for self-obsessed people. But humility, in my opinion, is not being Uriah Heepish and tugging your forelock and letting trucks run over your foot. Hope I didn't hurt your tire. Humility is being yourself without having to put on a front, without trying to impress people. And none of us can do it very well. We can do it a little bit after a while, but not much. But that's what Alcoholics Anonymous is about. That's what this phrase means. Why do we have anonymity? This to the end that our great blessings may never spoil us. That's what it's about. And I think that is something we try to do. Now, throughout the country, there are little pockets of enthusiasm that keep AA going, where traditions are observed and the steps are used, and there are hundreds of people engaged in strong sponsorship. Anytime you see an enthusiastic section of AA, you will find strong sponsorship and attention to the traditions. And this morning I've asked my friend from Omaha, Dick, who's got in the little town of Bellevue, Nebraska, which is a few thousand people, they have hundreds of people at their AA meeting, and they're alive, and they're involved, and they're sober, and they're under attack from the dilettante groups all around them. And we all know how that goes. So I've asked him to give exactly 4.5 minutes of his experience.
Thank you, Clancy. My name is Dick Martin, and I'm an alcoholic. Everybody. You know, when I think of the traditions, I think of my own personal relationship to Alcoholics Anonymous, my own personal relationship with those people in the group, and I think of the personal relationship I have with my family and my family members and the people out on the street and so on and so forth, wherever it happens to be. You know, traditions in Alcoholics Anonymous, we generally speak of those, and a lot of newcomers think, well, you know, they're terribly unimportant because all of the big wheels in AA use those. It's not for the little people. It's for the people who run Alcoholics Anonymous. And they don't realize that they're the ones that are running Alcoholics Anonymous and not doing it very well at that. But what they amount to are really a series of principles which guide us in we didn't know where to go and what to do and how to come and how to go, and we didn't know what the hell to do. I mean, we just honestly, when we came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't know what to do. Perhaps you did, but I really didn't know what to do. I didn't know right from wrong. I didn't know what I was supposed to do and what I was not supposed to do. And I'd made so many errors in judgment, I needed some guidelines. And that's what the traditions are. They're guidelines. And my sponsor taught me that those guidelines are for me to follow, for me to learn to live with other people, because I'd made a terrible mess of my life, and I was very unsuccessful as a result of that. And this idea of having some unity with your fellow man and giving a hoot about them instead of caring about yourself so much was a little bit different. I always kind of wanted to do that because I thought it made me look good, but I didn't realize that doing it on a continued basis would make me feel good. I didn't realize the fact I always liked to have money in my pocket, and I didn't realize, however, that I didn't like to owe people money, and I owed a lot of money when I came to AA. I didn't like that. and I didn't realize that the spiritual significance of being self-supporting is the fact that it gave me dignity, and I didn't have to worry. It took the worry out of my life. It eliminated problems in my life. And the problems of having to think, well, where am I going to get the money to pay this one? I'll get this bank loan and cover that bank loan, and I'll do this, and I'll borrow here, and I'll not pay this one. And, you know, I don't have to do that. You know, that isn't something that I have to go through and occupy my life with. And it gives me this spiritual release so that I'm more comfortable with myself, that I have the dignity that I always wanted to have, that I just wanted to be a human being who could lie down and go to bed at night and go to sleep and wake up in the morning at the normal hour instead of 3 or 4 o'clock wondering whether it was time for the rope or the river. So it's time to work, and it's time to be self-supporting and trying to do as good a job as I could do. Principles of the traditions tell me also that I'm supposed to contribute something. And I don't mean being charitable. I don't mean that end of it. But I mean that I'm supposed to try to make the situation better, that I'm supposed to see what I can add to life, not see what I can take away from life. I know what I can take away from life because I was a taker and a user and an abuser all my life. And I knew how to do that. But I wasn't supposed to do that. What I was supposed to do was to be a giver, to be kind and considerate of other people. And that's what the traditions guide me to do. They guide me to be within a framework of being a gentleman, in the framework of being a person who kindly considers other people, hopefully some of the time before I'm considering myself. And the idea, I think, where it talks about the and this to the end, that our great blessings from the devil spoil us, it reminds me of one really simple thing. If I'm practicing these principles in my life, that what it gives me is a surcease of pain. That it takes away the idea that I have to think about myself all the time. And humility, as it describes it in the 12th tradition to me, says that humility is not thinking less of myself, but thinking of myself less. And it sounds a little goofy, but when you think about it a moment, it really makes it very simple. You know, if I'm thinking about you, I'm not thinking about me. And Alcoholics Anonymous and early members, and Clancy was talking about those members in the early 40s and 50s and so on. There are many of them who would get up the podium of Alcoholics Anonymous and aggrandize themselves and say what they had been and where they had gone and what they had done in Alcoholics Anonymous, and number of 12 steps calls they went on last week and what they're doing next week, and you know, the people that they've sponsored and how wonderful they were. And most of those people died from alcoholism. And it's kind of funny in Alcoholics Anonymous because there are a number of us in AA who are very active in Alcoholics Anonymous and try to spend a lot of time helping other people. We don't go around talking about that. We don't say how wonderful we are and what are these grand things that we have done and what our great accomplishments have been. We very quietly talk and share about these people to ourselves and with other members and those that who care. But we don't talk about it from podiums of Alcoholics Anonymous. We find it better to let others speak of us rather than for us to speak of ourselves. And isn't it nice? Isn't it nice when we act in a principled way and we consider our fellow man at least on the same level at the time we're considering ourselves, if not considering them before us? The peace that it gives us. And when we have peace in our lives, and when we're doing the things we should be doing and show up and be where we're supposed to be when we're supposed to be there, and act in those general principles that we have learned in Alcoholics Anonymous, isn't it nice? Isn't it nice that we can end up thinking about something slightly above our crotches, and we begin to think about our hearts, perhaps, and we think about the love that we have for another human being, and we're not any longer so self-centered as we were. And we lose this self-centeredness, and we become centered in others. And Alcoholics Anonymous is not a self-help program. It's a help others program, and that's what the whole thing is all about. And if we do that, we have peace. It gives us peace. We don't do these things to be wonderful people so that people will say, oh, isn't he great? We do them so that we'll have peace in our own life, so that we can be relaxed and at ease and not feel the churning in our gut and not feel the pain and the anguish and the embarrassment we used to feel. That's why we do them. We do these things because it fits us to do them. Not to make ourselves wonderful, but to stop the pain. And that's what Alcoholics Anonymous is for, and that's what these principles are for. So then that we can think about something a little more than than ourselves. And perhaps we can think of him and presides over us all at that time. Thank you, Clancy.
What Dick said was very, very true. It took a little longer than I'd hoped. What he said was really true. I have another member here I'm going to give 3 minutes to, only because he led the old-timers meeting this morning, and one of the old-timers talked so long it took up his own time, and he was crying on my lapel and got all stained. So I'll give you 2 minutes, Harvey.
Oh.
My name is Harvey Andrews, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm from Covina, California, one of the sobriety capitals of the world. You have to say that here, you know. 2 minutes is a long time for me to talk. I thought Dick was taking an oath for a while. Anyway, I love to talk about the traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous because one of the mainstays I think I have deep down inside of myself is, years ago when I was new in AA and I was a couple of years sober, I was back in 1958, 59, and I became known in my area as the enforcer. I took what I thought was unenforceable bylaws and I was going to enforce them myself. If you broke a tradition at a meeting, I would knock on your door about 11 o'clock and tell you about it. I had a permanent marks on my nose where people had slammed the screen door at it and said, I really don't give a shit, you know, about traditions. One of the things I always like to talk about, because you see it so much when the violation of it is so much when in the advertisements of our name, or using the name of Alcoholics Anonymous so well. We had a pizza parlor around for a long time that had two entryways going to the pizza parlor. One was where the beer was sold at the bar, and the other two doors you went into where they ate actually had the name Alcoholics Anonymous entrance written on the top of that entry door. And I'm one who was called upon to do something about that. And, you know, in my very soft and easy manner that I talked to everybody about it in the industry, and we finally got those signs removed from the top of that Shakey's Pizza Parlor is what it was. And wouldn't that be something, though? All of us coming, oh, that's our entrance, you know, to walk into it. It always reminds me, too, of breaking it in the paper, people who start things up and use our names. And I'm against that so much. Old Deacon Pomona called me up one day and said, Harv, here's what they're doing in Pomona. Some lady had started up a 12-step house, and she had a big ad in the paper with her picture in the paper, and it said, the caption of the paper, it said, Alcoholics Anonymous is in dire need of refrigerators and money. Here's the address to send it to. In my nice, quiet manner that I went to the editor of the newspaper and went to the person who wrote the article, and the editor told me emphatically, as he tried to force me through the door, that he would never write anything about Alcoholics Anonymous again. And I hope he never does, you know. But it seems like that, it really gets to you when you're a member of AA and you know the traditions and you want things to go well, and you want things to happen in your life, and you don't want anybody... I hate... And you see that sign going down the freeway. And that Alcoholics Anonymous in the back of cars. And how dare they, you know? And the people who advertise it, you know, that they are members. I don't believe in that. There's so many things. I was in the 12 Traditions play years ago. And we didn't have a script for that play in those days. Now they have a script you can go by. And I played the Shapiro in that play. I went around and locked up all the groups who had not pure alcoholics in the meetings. You know, they had women of the night in there and things like that. And it was it's a fabulous play to see. If you haven't seen it and you're new, please, if you ever see it advertised anywhere or heard it up from a podium somewhere, they're going to play it, please go see it. It's very revealing to what really goes on and outside of AA and in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I like to close with one little story because there hasn't been much humor here today. And you always read about Dr. Bob and Bill and things like that. And I don't know if you knew it or not, but Dr. Bob was a proctologist. And they used to say, you really got to bet your ass when you go to him. And you know, doctors are always signing these articles, signing for a release, signing for medication, signing for entry and a whole bit. The story goes that he went up to this counter and the nurse says, would you sign this? And he pulled out his pen and he opened it up and he had a rectal thermometer in his hand. He said, some asshole's got my pen. Thank you.
I've said this before and I'll say it again. You can laugh if you want it, but if I had one day left to live, I'd like to spend it listening to Harvey tell his stories. I know it would make it seem like forever. Yeah. But we've had a little wind-up here on the 12 Traditions this morning. We've had a very good meeting preceding this on the Practicing the Principles by John and old-timers and all kinds of things. And we all get reinforced again and again about the steps and how we should do this, as is rightfully so. But you and I, as concerned members of Alcoholics Anonymous, who want there to be a place for those after us to come, want to make sure that we keep these traditions. When we see them broken, I don't think you should get into a fight, but you should do something about it. The World Service Office should be informed of a major break in traditions, or certainly your central office should be formed. If within your group there are non-alcoholics, now don't misunderstand me. If you're an alcoholic and a narcotic addict, you're welcome. An alcoholic and an overeater, that's fine. But one of the things wrong must be an alcoholic. That is, according to the literature, that is the psychological reason why Alcoholics Anonymous is effective, promoting the same information that's been there for 4,000 years. One alcoholic talking to another alcoholic to help him reduce his feelings of difference at least enough so that he will begin to take actions he does not yet believe in. And that is what Alcoholics Anonymous is today, as it was on June 10th, 1935. I personally want to say one thing. This has nothing to do with what we're doing here. We've got 3 minutes left, I guess. But I want to say one thing. I think that I was not involved in the planning nor working on this convention. I have nothing to do with it. So therefore, I can honestly say I think that whatever the problems and travails that went into the promotion of this convention, it all worked out very well. And I think this has been an excellent Alcoholics Anonymous convention. Good speakers, good meetings, good involvers. I want to, on behalf of at least myself, thank this year's Chairman George for bringing it all together, whatever it took to bring it together. And to extend all of us our best wishes and our hopes to Joe C. next year in Bakersfield, and we hope we will all be there and we'll be judging you every moment of the time between now and then, you know that. But we wish you well, Joe. And all of that is all encompassed again in the traditions. All that's from your unity and togetherness. Is that 12th? I want to read this 12th tradition one more time, then we'll close. I can almost, I don't want to make a mistake and quote it wrongly. And finally, we of Alcoholics Anonymous feel that the principle of anonymity has an immense spiritual significance. It reminds us that we are to place principles before personalities. That we are actually to practice a genuine humility. This to the end that our great blessings may never spoil us, that we shall forever live in thankful contemplation of Him who presides over us all. And I trust that you and I will take advantage of that blessing as long as we live. After a moment's meditation, would you please join me in the Lord's Prayer? Let me say one thing. The next meeting at 10:30 will be held in this hall at the final closing meeting. Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory, forever. Amen. Amen.